Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. I am your co-host, Dr. Rob Meter, and I'm here with Tony.
Hey, Rob, we are back in the studio together.
No kidding.
This is exciting. It has been a while.
Yeah. So, you know, we have gotten together a few times this summer, just you and Carrie and Rose and I. We've, you know, as friends, we've gotten together, but now we're together in the studio. And just for scheduling differences, we did have to do some interviews separately. And we've, you know, we've had some great episodes this summer, but I am super excited to be back with you in the studio.
So yes,
thanks for inviting me.
We are here. Hey, anytime. We had some good times boating this
summer.
We did.
Oh yeah. It's been great. And you know, milestone for us this summer was my youngest turned 13. So I am now officially a parent of four teenagers for the next 3 years. So please pray for me. And so far, so good, though. It's been a fantastic summer with the
kids.
Well,
so far, I don't know. I don't think they're giving you too much stress, Rob. I don't see the gray hairs.
Well, they're easily hidden. They're easily hidden, and they are coming. Let's put it that way. So, in fact, I took my 16-year-old this evening. I was a bit late coming here because we went driving. So she's learning how to drive.
Oh, yes.
And it's the second time that we were out on the roads. And so, yes, the gray hairs are coming for sure.
I remember those days teaching my boys how to drive standard.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm not even going that route. I'm going straight to automatic. So, yes, that is hard. I remember learning myself as a teenager on a standard car. And I think my dad had probably a few heart attacks, you know, as the engine almost shot out of the car, you know, every time I stalled it or, you know. So, but at least I know how to drive a standard car.
You had the learner car.
Yes, we had to learn a car that was like the beater car.
Yeah.
And that car, by the time my youngest brother, you know, I'm one of four, I'm the oldest. So I was the first one to learn on it. By the time my youngest brother came through, that car was barely driving anymore.
Right. So.
But we're doing okay with our car so far.
Great. Yeah. Great. Well, Rob, this is a special day because we are hitting 100,000 downloads.
Yes, I know.
100,000. And we are just so very grateful for all of you who tune in, who have interacted with us, and you've been listening to the episodes. We've been hearing your feedback. And we're just so grateful that we've had guests who say yes and conversations that apparently are meeting a need. So
we've been getting lots of great feedback. And it is kind of funny, Tony, because I think it's like literally this hour that we're recording, that counter is going to flip to 100,000. Like,
I jumped the gun.
Yes. We'll check later. You know, you can, for those of you who are into podcasting, you know, you can kind of check to see how many downloads your podcast has had. And it may actually flip over like within the next few minutes. So we'll see. But yeah, that is a milestone for sure. And I'm also so proud of what we've recorded so far and the episodes we've had on and the feedback we've received. And plus it's been such a joy doing it with you, Tony. And so thank you for being co-hosts on this show. And I think we've had a really nice variety of topics ranging from parenting to child development, to mental health, to marriage, to money, to, you know, all these topics that I think really resonate with people. So thank you.
Yeah. And likewise, thank you, Rob. And I'm so proud of our guests who have been so dedicated and put all those hours into their research, you know, all their hard work and clinical work with families, parents, and kids. And so, I'm very, very grateful.
Mm-hmm. And today, you know, we have a few guests coming up, and we should probably mention a couple of great episodes, I think, that are in the pipes. So I'm excited that we're going to be talking to Dr. Walt Karniski soon. He's a developmental pediatrician who's written probably what I think is one of the best books on the topic of ADHD. And if you remember our interview with Dr. Barkley, really was one of our most popular episodes.
Yes.
People want to know more about this topic. And so I was excited when we reached out to Dr. Karniski and he said, yeah, for sure, I'd love to talk about this. So I'll be interviewing him in the next few weeks and you'll hear that episode up soon. Mm-hmm. And then I think we've got some topics on marriage as well, right?
We do, for sure. We've got Dr. John Deloney, who's with Dave Ramsey team. He is going to be talking to us about all things marriage. Can't wait for that interview. John Acuff is going to be talking to us about soundtracks and your new playlist, which is a book that he wrote with his two daughters. This interview is going to be amazing. He talks about overthinking and, you know, we hear it from his perspective, but also from his daughter's perspective. So such a valuable topic on, you know, how do you get those negative messages, those negative soundtracks to tone down and, you know, move ahead into, you know, whatever it is that you actually are designed to be doing. And then we've got Dr. Karen Gordon talking to us about, yes, she is going to join us in person. We're super excited whenever we can interview somebody in the studio. She's going to be talking to us about leadership. She has a fantastic TED Talk that was just released. And so leadership, not just for leaders, you know, the things that she has to say apply to people. Adults, kids can benefit from her amazing wisdom. So yes, super excited about the fall lineup.
Yeah. And she's just written a book called The Three Chairs, which I think is really great. And she was talking to me about it and the concepts in there are so amazing. John Acuff wrote, you know, Your New Playlist, that book. Also should mention Dawn Barclay. Her book just came out. As you recall from episode 61, she wrote about traveling with neurodiverse kids. And so her book just came out as well. So check that out. And that came out in August.
And the title 15th. Of that book, Rob?
Yeah, her book is called Traveling Different: Vacation Strategies for Parents of the Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse. And I'm sure it's a fantastic read because her interview was amazing. So check that out.
Yeah, excited for that. So today we have had a listener ask us, how do you encourage your kids to find friends? You know, what kind of guiding influence can parents have? And so we wanted to talk about all things kids and friendships and community.
Yeah. And so timely, Tony, because it is back to school time. Mm-hmm. And plus we're kind of coming out of a pandemic, you know. I feel like we're coming on a tail end of that. I know there's probably another wave in store for most of us, but it feels like things are more normal now. And I am hoping for a more normal school year. And our kids are going to be around other kids and hopefully developing friendships. So,
yes. Yeah. So, Rob, I'm curious just to pick your brain about what the research or medical literature has to say about the importance of friendships. And along with that, does the literature say anything about, you know, how many friends, like what's the appropriate number, if I can just ask it that way?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because I think parents think about this a lot. They're always wondering, like, does my child have too few friends? Usually that's the concern. You know, most parents don't come to me and say my kid has too many friends.
Right.
But usually the concern is that my child has too few friends. And I'll preface that by saying, Tony, that, you know, we are social creatures. We are meant to have connections. We thrive. We have social relationships. We know that's true for adults. And in childhood, we learn that. And our brains are wired to be connected, to other kids. Now, there are limits, of course. You and I, we can't know everybody. And in fact, we're programmed really to know maximum sort of 150 people closely. And that's sort of the size of our quote-unquote tribe. But even of those 150, there's really only a handful or so that we could really really count on and depend on as wanting the best for us and really connect with.
Right.
And that number, though, when I say a handful, I'm purposely being vague because that number is different for everyone. And there are some kids who are comfortable with one or two friends, and there are others who are comfortable with 10 or 12 friends that feel like that's a good number where they feel comfortable. Some kids get anxious in that kind of a crowd. And, you know, there's going to be a different in how you're raised. Like my wife, for instance, she would love to have 15 friends around her all the time, you know, yes. And she's social, gregarious, know, Rose. Whereas me, you know, if I'm on a bike ride with one or two other guys, that's my comfort zone. And So we're all different, and we have to be very careful that when we are talking about our own children, that we don't project our expectations for what the right number of friends is onto them. So, you know, if it was up to me, I'd be happy if my son had, you know, two or three friends, and that's great. And the other, whereas my wife might say, well, he's got too few friends. But really, we have to take the lead from our kids. You know, we can see what their comfort zone is. We might know that, yeah, in a big crowd, they tend to be less comfortable. Or no, my child just draws energy from a big crowd, you know? Mm. So getting to know your child's temperament and what their desires are, and actually not worrying too much about this. Unless your child is really alone all the time and they isolate themselves, when you're getting a sense that, you know, there's something wrong here, that's maybe a time to start asking that question. But in general, kids will seek out the number of friends that they think is appropriate for them. And to try to make it more or less than what is comfortable for them is probably a lost cause.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It sounds like there might be some connection with that comfortable number of friends and the scale of introversion and extroversion. Do you think there's a link there?
Yeah. You know, it's one of the personality, you know, features. You know, if you look at the five personality characteristics, you know, extroversion is one of them, right? And that's a scale, introversion, extroversion. And some kids are going to be more introverted. Some are going to be more extroverted. And yeah, for sure, that's going to relate to the comfort level with how many friends around us. But I guess my message is that, A, you know, unless it's really on the extreme, don't worry about it too much. The other thing that I want to point out too is that that number is going to vary from time to time. You know, there's going to be seasons.
Even within the same child.
Exactly. Yes. There's going to be seasons in a child's life where they're going to be a bit more on the quieter side, and then other times, you know, when they're going to be a bit more on the social side. And that's okay. You know, there are going to be seasons, and friends are going to change. You know, if you're a parent of, especially preteens and teens, you know, there's going to be drama and, you know, some friends are best friends 1 month, and then the next month, they're like, whatever happened to that friend? Oh, we're not friends anymore. And now we're friends with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. So seeing that group shift over time is very normal. And it's actually unusual for a child to have one best friend for years and years when they're younger. Mm-hmm. You know, kids do develop, their personalities develop, and kids who are friends 1 year are going to drift away the next year. And that's actually normal. It's nothing to be worried about.
Right. So let's speak to the listener whose child does seem to be isolated, you know, is really struggling to make friends. What can a parent do to encourage friendships? What are some of the strategies?
Well, the main important thing is not to force it. You know, you do want to work with your child in introducing them to other kids. So obviously you want to provide opportunities for that, right? So if there's a play date planned, or you've got an activity planned and you want to maybe invite another friend along, that's great. It's good if you can do it in a safe setting. So when your child is with you, for example, you might go out with another parent and their child, rather than just kind of throwing your child into the middle of a birthday party, let's say, and then leaving.
Right.
That's going to be anxiety provoking. If your child is prone to being more or less anxious, that's probably not a good situation. The other thing that you want to do too is you want to, first of all, for your child, be that secure and stable base, right? Because unless a child has that secure and stable attachment, you know, they're not going to be comfortable to explore and to, you know, wander kind of further afield, right? Mm-hmm. And so a child needs that stability and that security from which to set out and, you know, explore the world and make new friends and meet new people. And so it's important that we as parents, you know, let our children know that we're comfortable with that. You know, if we exude an anxiety or maybe an over-carefulness or a real aversion for risk and risk avoidance, you know, our kids are going to pick up on that. Mom's nervous, so I must be nervous about that too. Or, you know, dad's, you know, not wanting me to do this and that, so there must be something that I need to be careful of. They look to us. And, you know, some great studies have come out recently showing that, yeah, there's a genetic component to things like anxiety, but yet a more significant component of how that's transmitted from, you know, parent to child is really through how it's modeled. Right. So not so much genetics and much more on the nurture side. Okay. So if we are exuding anxiety and, you know, social anxiety, especially, our kids are going to just naturally look to us and say, maybe there's something to that. And maybe I need to be a bit more like careful and, you know, draw in and not, you know, kind of wander out and seek new relationships.
So. Yeah. It sounds like it's possible for a parent's even anxiety about the fact that their kids don't have friends, you know, they're anxious about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's possible to transfer that to your child as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And in general, like kids just pick up on any stress in general, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I talk about this with parents all the time. It's like kids pick up the vibe. They pick up the vibe in the household. They pick up their vibe in their closest, you know, attachments, which is usually their parents. Mm-hmm. If they sense something's not wrong or something's not right, if they sense threat through you, you know, that is going to make them feel threatened as well and anxious and worried. And so I'm not saying like, you know, always be like, you know, over the top happy and carefree, because mm-hmm. that's not realistic either. No. But you always want to really give your kids the message that, hey, you're safe with me. You're safe. You know, I love you no matter what. My love's unconditional for you. You've always got me here. And I know that you can go out there and check this out and do that and try that new thing and meet that new person. So kind of that both and combination. Like, I'm here for you and I'd love for you to grow and develop and try new things.
Well, I think one of the most powerful ways of communicating the value of friendship is for parents to have great friendships and to allow their kids to see them in action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. We model friendship too, mm-hmm. right? So if they see us, you know, enjoying and benefiting from friendships, you know, they see us relying on our friends in times of need. We all need friends, Tony. Mm-hmm.
Like, exactly. And celebrating with friends.
Exactly. And we've celebrated with you and Carrie so many times, and our kids see that. They see, look, my parents are really, they really love their friends. They love the network. And, you know, we know that that's one of the biggest predictor of like a long, healthy life is how many connections and relationships you have. Mm. I mean.
And the depth of them. Absolutely. That they're not superficial relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, when I say friendship, I'm implying that it's not just an acquaintance.
Yeah.
Right. And so we want to just show our kids the value of friendship. And honestly, they do pick that up from us just as much as they pick up our stress. They pick up our resilience and our thriving as well.
Yeah.
So it goes both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So bottom line, don't ask your kids to go and do something that you're not doing. That's like, true. I mean, you do want your kids to have friends, but you're, mm-hmm. if you are isolated and you're not really connecting with friends, that sends your child a very potent message.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a way, you know, you transmit parts of your personality to your child. That's just natural. Kids, they grow up around us. They're in our environment. They're in our sphere. They pick up on how we do things and they see what we benefit from and what we are stressed out about. And, so I think I've just been struck more and more by that as over the years, I'm mm-hmm. seeing more mental health and behavior. I'm just seeing the power, even subconsciously that we have over how our kids develop, and really developing in them a positive mindset, a growth mindset that's development oriented, I think is so powerful.
Right. How about the parent whose child seems to be just too attached to screens? Like it almost seems to be losing interest in having friends around. You know, they're so focused on the game or whatever it is that has captured their attention. How do you make that transition, you know, away from the screens and toward really relating with people in real life?
Yeah, I think that's really important, Tony, because over the last 2 years, you know, with COVID, we've seen a lot more kids focus more and more on screen. And that's been out of necessity. You know, we've had schools online. We've actually, you know, at one point when people were quarantined, et cetera, and they were isolated, we promoted the use of screens to stay in touch with relatives and with friends.
For sure.
And, you know, and there, I just also want to say, like, there are some pros to the social media and being socially connected, you know, maybe more so than ever before. But yet we also know that despite the rise of all of that digital connection, loneliness and rates of loneliness are higher than ever. And we know that connecting digitally with people is just not the same as in person. We've seen that happen in the workplace. We see a lot more workplaces realize that, you know, people being together is powerful. We see that in communities of faith, for example, where we realize the power of gathering together. Mm-hmm. We know that in schools, yes, there are some kids who are more comfortable learning online. But for most kids, gathering with other kids and learning to work together and as a team and collaboratively happens best when you're around other people. And so, again, that goes back to the fact, like, we're wired to be social, we're wired to be connected, and that is most powerfully achieved in person. And so that is a big issue right now with a lot of kids being on screens and sometimes feeling that being on social media is a substitute for in-person connection, mm-hmm. but it's not. And so we do want to promote more and more that kids spend time outside, spend time around other children, a little bit less time on the video games. Tends to be, you know, stereotypically, but there's some truth to it. It's boys on the video games, girls tend to be more on social media. So to kind of put some limits around that and some parameters around that, we have to be very careful because the games and the social media platform, they're meant to be addictive. You've got Silicon Valley, you know, got this down to an art. You know, they want eyeballs on screens, advertisers, personal information, et cetera. So there's a lot in it for this giant sort of, you know, industry to have kids stay on screens and adults stay on screens. And it starts with kids.
Yeah. And that so, documentary, the Social Dilemma.
Yeah.
Really laid that out.
Yep. Yep. And we've had a few episodes already here on the Smart Family Podcast as well, talking about screen time with Arlene Pellicane, with Jeff Henderson. You know, we've talked about these topics and just how important it is to really limit the amount of screen time. And, you know, as parents, especially of young kids, you've got, you know, the ability to do that relatively easily. You know, you could set some parameters around that. As the kids get older, it does get a bit more difficult. But certainly, for younger kids, you want to be your child's frontal lobe still, you know, you want to set some limits around that. And to be honest, most kids, they may not appreciate that on the outside, but inside, you know, kids do get less anxious when there are some boundaries and some limits in place. And that's still our job as parents. So,
sure. I was recently talking to a high school principal who said that, you know, kids are in her school and they will be in a group. It looks like they are interacting with each other, but actually, if you take a closer look, they're all on their phones. They're not really interacting with each other. They're more on the screen than they are, you know, in person interacting. And her suggestion was, you know, whenever you can, if you're leading a group or getting a bunch of kids together, you know, try to encourage the putting the phones away in a box, like put them here, you know, for this time, for this hour or two, we're just going to be phone free. I think that has an influence.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and three of my kids went to camp this summer and the camps they went to were phone free camps. You know, the phones went into a Ziploc bag on day one and they got them back on day seven. And, and I asked my kids, well, how does that go? It's like, you know what, Dad, after about a day or so, we don't even think about phones and we don't even really want phones because they're distracting, they're disrupting, they're buzzing. You know, you're always wondering like, what do I need to take a picture of and post? And so all of that pressure is gone. Yes. And, you know, when they're kept busy and they're outside, the attraction of the phones, if they're physically away and not in reach, it fades pretty quickly, which is good to know.
Yeah.
And it shows you that you know, it can be done.
Right. And were any of your kids upset by it initially?
No. In fact, they would even say they appreciated it for that week or 2 weeks that they were without their phone. And they'll, for them, you know, I'm not saying that's true for everybody, but sure. Just my experience with my kids was that it was definitely not a negative experience. And if anything, it just allowed them to focus and enjoy camp more.
Wow. That's wonderful. Yeah. I think as parents, we all go through that experience of our kids developing a friendship that we're not sure about. You know, it seems to be more of a negative influence than a positive one. What can parents do? And I'm thinking about middle schoolers and teenagers.
Yeah.
What can parents do when those friendships seem to be heading in a direction we're not really comfortable with?
Yeah, good point, Tony. I think when the kids are younger, you have a lot of abilities to still sort of, you know, moderate that and curate their friendships and sort of set up the opportunities that you think are going to be helpful and beneficial. But even then, I'd be careful because sometimes our judgment of like who's going to make my kids sort of best friendship, it might be off as well, right? And so sometimes our kids will choose friends where like, okay, well, didn't think you guys had much in common, but that's fine. But as our kids get older, you know, we really have less and less opportunity to really be in control of that. And we can have some influence, but ultimately I found that can really backfire too. If we just tell our kids, hey, I don't want you to hang around with so-and-so anymore, especially our teenagers, they're at a stage in their life where they're going to say like, well, I'm just going to do it more then. And because they want to be independent, they want to have some agency and some control. And, you know, our ability to control that is less and less. And sometimes we just have to accept the fact that, yeah, there's going to be some kids that our kids hang around that, you know, may be more of a negative influence. And to some extent, we can control that because, you know, we may still have to drive them places and drop them off. But even then, you know, when they start driving themselves and when they're at school, we can't be there. We can't, you know, moderate that all the time. And so we just have to accept the fact that our kids will choose who they hang around with. But when it comes to like talking about like, well, going to this party or that party, you know, I think what you can do as parents is say like, look, I can't choose your friends for you. And, you know, you're going to make some decisions that I may or may not agree with, but it's you choose your friends. But as your mom or your dad, your safety is what's important to me. And that's what I want to focus on. You know, I need to make sure that you're safe. That is my responsibility. So I want to be sure that, you know, if there's drinking at this party, that you don't get into a car with somebody who's been drinking. And if you've been drinking, that I want you to call me and I'll pick you up, no questions asked. If there's stuff going on that's not safe, I'm there for you and I want to help you and I want you to help you to avoid that. I want to keep you safe. And because, you know, it's almost impossible for a child to argue with that, you know, it's like, well, yeah, okay, of course I can understand that. And thanks, mom. And, you know, you always want to reinforce, I'm here. I unconditionally love you. No matter what, I'm here for you. And you also want to respect the fact that they're going to make decisions about many things, not just friends. And as teenagers, not all those decisions are going to be great. As you know, you've had two teenagers too. And I'm sure you've had those moments. And I'm in that stage right now where we just have to accept that that's going to happen. But we do have a responsibility as parents to make sure that to what extent possible, our kids are safe.
Yeah, for sure. I'm also wondering, Rob, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, you know, the years that lead up to teen years. I think we have the opportunity as parents to have conversations with our kids about what they value in a friend and make it a reciprocal conversation. You know, they can say what they value in a friend, but you also talk about what you value in a friend.
Yeah.
So that they're alert to, you know, character traits and reciprocity and kindness and similar values.
Yeah. You know, and what I like to always reinforce about friends is, you know, how do you know someone is a true friend versus one that just, you know, wants to hang out with you for whatever reason, or doesn't really come in and wants to use you for your, you know, ability to help out with homework or whatever. Yeah.
Are you the deal or is it the real deal?
Yeah. Is, you know, the question to ask is, you know, does this person really want the best for me? Are they in my corner when maybe I'm feeling down or low and they really want to help out? Are they going out of their way to congratulate me? And do they really, are they really happy for me when things go well? And do they struggle with me when I'm struggling? You know, are they there for me at the tough times? And so, you know, your true friends are the ones who really want the best for you. And that, and those characteristics, you know, they develop with kids. You know, that's obviously not something that young kids might be able to verbalize or maybe get a, understand in that deeper way. But as kids get older and teenagers, they realize, and sometimes it takes a friendship that's gone awry or that wasn't the greatest for them to realize that maybe that wasn't the true friend that I thought that person was, because they were gone at the sight of trouble. And when I was having a difficult time, they were nowhere to be found. Or worse yet, they, you know, they mocked me or they made fun of me and they made it worse. So sometimes it takes a few relationships like that for teenagers to get that. And the practical experience is probably worth gold compared to what you might lecture them on. So there's nothing wrong with that. That's again, and as parents, that's again, that comfort zone, like, okay, I can keep my kids close at home and sort of shield them from everything, but reality, I can't. And I do have to give them the opportunity to explore and make some mistakes while at the same time doing everything I can to make sure that they're safe while they're doing that.
Right.
That's hard.
Yeah, that's it's a tall order. I think as kids go along, if a relationship does seem to be, you know, maybe crumbling or disintegrating or there's a problem, debriefing it with them. And really talking about, you know, what would, in you know, a depth that's appropriate to their age and stage and maturity level, so that they have the groundwork for understanding it, for self-awareness, but also awareness in developing the next friendship.
Yeah.
You know, what are they looking for?
Yeah, when things don't go well, the last thing they want to hear is "I told you so," or, you know. You know, really, and this is true for parenting at any stage, when your kids are having a hard time, connect with them on that limbic level.
Yes, Jen Kohlrabi
about in connected parenting, she talks about, you know, collecting like with your child on this limbic level, she calls it, right? On this emotional level, kind of emoting with them.
Yeah, so sorry, I mispronounced her last name.
It's Jennifer Kohlrabi. Yes.
Yeah.
And so she really emphasized that a lot in her connection talk about how to connect with kids. And when they are having a tough time, when they're melting down, or when they're younger, or when they're just sad, when they're older, hey, I hear you. I see where you're going through. I'm here for you.
And even match their intensity. She said, like, match their intensity so they know that you get it. You get their emotional, the emotional response that they're experiencing.
Exactly. And mirroring, affect matching, and staying calm. You know, that's what kids need at that time, right? So, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so now, Rob, we've been talking about kids developing friendships with other kids, but does the medical literature have anything to say about kids being surrounded by a community and having voices other than their parents speaking into their lives? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything new in the medical literature on that, but certainly it's a well-described principle that, you know, kids need to be in community, right? And that's it with their peers. I think most important, they need to be in a community that's their family, all right? I think the family is a huge part in a kid's life. And that can be many, you know, sizes and shapes, you know, that's grandparents, extended families, that's aunts and uncles, cousins, you know. That's, again, how our brains are wired, to be in that sort of cluster of people that are kin. But beyond that, you know, it is a really great principle to surround your kids with people that you know are going to be positive influences, teachers, coaches, a big brother, you know, youth group leaders, people that really, you know, have the best in mind for your kids and who can be a role model for your children. And I think to be intentional about that, even you know, I've seen some people be really intentional about that. Like actually, you know, hey, I'd love for you to go grab a coffee with so-and-so because, you know, they've done some amazing things in their life and I'd love for them to share that with you. I would say some kids are probably open to that. Other kids maybe less so. But if that opportunity arises and your child's interested, yeah, those connections are great. That, those sort of networking opportunities are fantastic. But, you know, what we've had in our family is, you know, Rose and I, we have a great group of core friends. And we've seen that group of core friends just take an interest in our kids and vice versa. Our kids just get to know them. And, you know, that influence has been great because we know those people, of course. We know they're great people. We know they have a lot to offer our kids in terms of life lessons and experiences. And so, you know, having your children included in your social circle, I think is a great way just to introduce your kids to, hey, look, there's other great people out there that I would love for you to meet. Yeah, we're your parents. We can tell you about the things that we've experienced and we have dreams for you, but they may not be exactly what, you know, you're thinking of. And, but look, so-and-so is a teacher or so-and-so is, you know, in business. And if you're interested in that, talk with them, you know, so having your network available to your kids is great. And vice versa. I love meeting my friends' kids and talking with them. I'd be more than happy to share with them, hey, yeah, you want to become a doctor? I can tell you how I did that. And well, here's some tips and some things you can do now. And here's some places you might volunteer or projects you might do to really, you know, try and maybe get into medical school and become a doctor, mm-hmm. for instance.
Yes, yes. I'm thinking of Carrie, my husband, Carrie Newhoff. Yeah. Wrote a book along with Reggie Joyner called Parenting Beyond Your Capacity. Yeah. And one of the main points they made in that book was that you want your child to have a healthy, life-giving relationship with another adult, mm-hmm. Somebody other than their parents, because your kids will inevitably reach a stage as a teenager when they're naturally growing toward independence. And there are things that they are not going to talk about with you as parents. But if they have a connection with another adult, then they have somebody to turn to in time of need. And just having those relationships available and supporting your child to develop, you know, one or two or three relationships with other adults is a really healthy safety net, you know, source of life for them, source of advice. When they may hesitate to tell you something.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I remember like in high school, I had a great teacher that I was really inspirational to me. And I still meet up with him from time to time. And we have a great talk. And that's my high school teacher now from like, 35, 40 years ago, right?
That's great, Rob.
But at that time, you know, he was the leader of the Outdoor Education Club. And he really helped me figure out which universities to go to because he knew a lot about that. He boosted my interest in science. You know, I remember he got me a subscription one year to like Scientific American. Oh, I was like, wow, that's really nice. And so I'm so grateful for that. And the other good thing is that my parents weren't intimidated by that in any way, right? They actually saw that, hey, this is great. You know, a great connection for Rob as he's growing up. And so, you know, of course, you want to, as parents, you know, you want to vet that a little bit and make sure that this is a great person for your child to get to know. But, you know, in general, that's great to cultivate. And I think those sort of connections will pay huge dividends for your kids. So absolutely. So yeah, get your child connected first, you know, within your family circle and your kin circle. See what they're interested in terms of friendships. And some kids are going to want more friends. Some kids are going to want fewer friends. And then, yes, a few, you know, adult mentors that you know are reliable and trustworthy and have your child's best interests in mind. If you've got your kids in sort of those spheres of influence, I think that really sets them up well for the future. No guarantees, but that certainly sets the stage for a healthy development and growth as they become adults.
Well, Rob, this has been such a great conversation. So I'm going to say thank you as I would thank any guest.
Yes, and as friends. Yes,
yeah,
you're welcome.
That was great.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, that is it for our conversation today. I hope there was a takeaway for you in this conversation. It's just such a such a big part of family life, having friendships and watching our kids take delight in their friends, you know, but also helping them to manage the hard moments or maybe even the, you know, the bullying that sometimes happens. So this whole topic of relationships is so important and can be complicated. And if you have any questions, you want more detail on something, or there's an issue that we didn't talk about today, but you're wondering, we would love to hear from you. Please reach out to us on our Instagram platform. You can direct message Smart Family Podcast, or you can reach out to us on our website, smartfamilypodcast.com.
So yeah, thanks for joining us today. It was so great having this conversation with you, Tony. And yeah, we look forward to some other great episodes coming up soon. Mm-hmm. We gave some details about that already earlier on this episode. So please do join us next time on the Smart Family Podcast, where it is our aim to help you love being home.